afternoon. Today is Friday, January the 9th, ninth day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, an old guy, Ken Woods.
Good afternoon.
Jeez, he doesn't even argue.
No, not anymore. I submit.
Yeah. You have to wake me up and get my attention before I can respond.
That's right. If the shoe fits. Yeah.
Oh, well. Okay, I'll save that comment for the break.
I'll be waiting.
Well, kind of catch up on some of the things that are going on. We had the chimney fire, we had the shooting, we had a fire, and that was all in the last 24 hours. So
that's right.
We got many things to talk about, unfortunately. We'll do it when we come back.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
St. Bernard's has openings for new children in our preschool and pre-kindergarten classes. Hi, I'm David Sharp, president of St. Bernard's Catholic School. St. Bernard's Early Childhood Education Center, license number 12540-2277, offers preschool and pre-kindergarten. We're open year-round from 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call us at 443-7705 to schedule a visit.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:12. Oh, give me the good book.
Here.
Let's see if we can start with the old good book. Did we tell everybody that Quimby was getting his knee replaced when he was here last time? Yeah. I saw him walking very slowly in a crosswalk about half an hour ago. Managed to avoid him, too.
That's good. So, yeah. Yeah, I didn't get a call, so.
Yeah. But I was far enough back I couldn't honk and you know, flip him off and you know, just kind of... Right.
Yeah.
Give him the respect I think he deserves.
Nice.
Yeah, so we'll be working on that one, too. Oh, geez. Let's see here. Quote this afternoon. Comes from, Christopher Marley or Lenny Bruce?
Lenny Bruce.
Okay. Yeah, this is kind of a rough one, but it'll work. Every day, people are straying away from the church and going back to God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like Lenny Bruce.
Boom. Yeah. Oh. When you hear about some of those things going on overseas today,
right.
Last couple of days, do you guys do anything different? I mean, I know we don't have a huge population of Muslim anarchists here.
Right.
If any.
No, we...
But we do have our fair share of anarchists here.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely raises the attention scale, and we do think of things. We get terrorist alerts from the FBI. We do get information on some of these terrorist attacks. A lot of magazines, periodicals will do articles on the type of response that the emergency services had to these type of events worldwide. So we do try to look at those and learn from them. Obviously, you know, people are people. So even though it may occur in another country, the type of tactics, the type of strategies they use, we can apply here. And if we can get out front of those at any time, then we're looking to do that.
Would the same thing hold true with some of the protests and the shootings and some of that kind of stuff that seem to be over the top, I guess would be my term. It might not be necessarily the correct one, but
with the protests in Ferguson, for instance, with a number of structures.
Oakland last night was protesting something. They went into some guy's funeral service and was starting to protest. And it's like, what?
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems like there's a core group. Do we have that core group, a core group here?
Not that I've seen in that same context, maybe much, much smaller. Of course, law enforcement deals with it much more frequently than we do. But anytime you get a group of people that are protesting, there is a possibility of injuries. We do have policies in place on how we're going to deal with them. Of course, our number one priorities to protect our firefighters, and if we can't get in and help somebody else, then
no, you almost got it right. Protect me, not protect you.
I I consider myself part of that crowd.
Okay.
So, still old, but still I do.
Yeah.
And, you know, we when there are those types of things, if it's a shooting like we had the other day in Cutton the other morning, then our firefighters will stage a few blocks away until law enforcement goes in and secures the scene. Again, we don't want to just be running in there not knowing what there's armed suspects, those types of things, and putting our firefighters at risk, and then they can't help anybody else.
If there's a bomb called, and we had one a little while ago,
mm-hmm.
Or a bomb scare, bomb threat, bomb,
right.
You know, something that looks like it could be, do you guys, are you part of the detonation crew? Do you guys do that, or is that more the...
We try
other
not
guys.
To detonate anything. We're trying to put the fires out. And that type
well,
of
I understand, but I know that you know it's a chemical a lot of times. You guys might have somebody who's involved in that kind of thing.
We really don't get involved with that. The sheriff has their bomb squad. And, you know, again, it's a situation where we would stage out of the potential blast area so that if it does occur, we can go in there and deal with the injuries and the, if there's a potential fire, that type of thing. So we really don't get involved. We're aware of some devices. We're aware of different types of potentials that could harm our firefighters. When we go into a scene, even though, you know, a bombing, let's say it did occur, there's always the chance of secondary devices and those types of things. And we're well aware of queuing into what we see and where to go.
The incident that happened out on Simone Boulevard Tuesday, out of the mill.
Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah, the electrocution, right.
Yeah. How do you respond to that kind of medical aid versus some of the other more, I guess, pedestrian?
Yeah. It's a similar situation where you want to be very well aware of your surroundings. And as firefighters, you know, we want to be able to help someone, but we can't just rush in and put our firefighters at risk. So when you get there, you see somebody who's in distress, but you also see them, you know, in contact with live electrical wires. So we're going to call PG&E, the plant, whoever it is, try to get that energy out of those lines, get them shut down as quickly as we can so that we can make a rescue and work on the first aid side. But it is very frustrating for us and limiting because those, you know, shutting off the power doesn't happen immediately. And but there's not really much we can do otherwise.
Probably lopping the lines would not be.
Yeah, that's not a we don't recommend
that. It's not recommended
that.
By experienced firemen, huh?
No, we try to keep people away from the lines, right.
In a situation where there's a down power line, mm-hmm. instead of somebody tangled up
right.
above, are those hazards waiting to happen? I mean, do you drive over them? Do you not drive over them? If you're in a car, do you get out? Do you move the car? Do you not move? I mean, there's some of those types of things that we don't think about because we don't have the windstorms here that to that extent, or tornadoes or
right.
hurricanes, where it's a more common experience.
Yeah, you never want to approach down wires, no matter what they are, because you don't know if they're energized or not. If you're in a vehicle accident and a wire drops on your vehicle, stay in your car. You're going to be in a better situation to be protected than to try to get out of the vehicle where you may come in contact with the ground and then get yourself electrocuted.
Because the tires are serving as the insulator.
Exactly. So we always advise people stay away from down wires, report them immediately, call 911. You know, a lot of times we'll go out and we'll determine, no, those are cable lines, there's no hazard, there's no electricity through them. But a lot of times they are live electrical wires, and sometimes they're not jumping around or arcing, but they're very live, and PG&E comes out and says, yeah, absolutely, don't go near those things until they get that power shut off.
Watch this, guys.
Yeah.
KINS, News and Information Times 319.
Attention 6th and 7th grade students. Plan now to attend the Ideas at Work Middle School Career Camp at College of the Redwoods this June. Campers take part in fun, hands-on projects in high-tech labs, tour businesses, and explore careers. There is no cost for this camp, but space is limited. Learn more and apply online at decadeofdifference.org or call 445-7563. Don't wait. Sign up today at decadeofdifference.org and be part of it.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods. Ken, one of the challenges I would imagine is when you guys get a call for service, at least as it was depicted in the press release, you pull up to a site, you can't see anything. You open the door.
Right.
Boom, then there it all is.
Yeah.
How deceiving can appearances be?
Very. And, you know, not every building is the same. Not every situation is the same. We try to go out and pre-plan, get into buildings, see what's there. But, you know, just when you're looking at the outside of a structure, particularly when we have a fire, you add the smoke component to it. You add the excitement of the fire itself.
Well, if it's a private residence, I mean, you're not going to...
It can be a private residence, but again, now, in particularly in our area, with the number of drug growing houses that we have, they look like a residence from the outside, but on the inside, they are not. You know, they're partitioned off. There could be dirt as soon as you walk in on the floor. There's
really?
Coverings
of
the windows.
Really? They just throw dirt down on the floor and grow?
Absolutely. There could be several...
Not even in boxes?
No. Several feet of dirt on the floor. Coverings over the windows and venting, the plastic vents, wiring, all those types of things, grow lights that are hanging down. And what you would expect to be a normal house, you can't see your hand in front of your face when you go into a fire. All of a sudden you're tangled up in these types of things. It's not furniture, what you expect. It's a totally different environment. And that's very hazardous to our firefighters. We train on it. But the big area is never really expect what you expect. You know, the situation awareness, and don't be surprised by what you find.
Piles of dirt, really?
Absolutely.
It just blows me out of the water.
Yeah, we've been to structure fires where the walls essentially have been opened up in the structure. The floor is just now dirt throughout the structure, and there's plants growing in there. There's open areas. There's lighting. There's the venting for the growing. And, yeah, it's totally different than what it looks like on the outside.
Saying house is really a misnomer. It's more of just like a shed or
yeah,
structure.
Yeah, it's a grow house, right. So that's all they're doing, and it is growing, right.
Huh. Yeah, I suppose if you stumble into one or two of those, all of a sudden you learn.
You know, you're expecting to in those types of things at night where you would potentially find a family sleeping. You're going to go in and search the structure as quickly as you can for victims. And as soon as you hit that door and you get in there, things aren't right. You know, you're in a totally different environment, a dirt floor. There's you don't know what you're getting across into. You don't know if there is a living space in a back area.
That's what I was going to ask you.
That type of thing as well.
This kind of a structure.
Right.
Do you tend to find people, or is it just it is what it is, and there's nobody in there, yeah. So you can step back and not worry about it?
It's really a combination. You know, a lot of these structures do have a portion of them that are dedicated and separated for growing, but there's a living as well. So there's your normal bedroom, there's normal kitchen, that type of thing. And so, again, you're going through, you're searching a structure, and you may be in the residential side where everything is fine, and then all of a sudden you open a door, not being able to see anything, and then you're in a grow room where you're instantly tangled in all these types of things, still trying to put out the fire, still trying to search for victims, but now you're worrying about your own self-rescue and getting out of the structure.
In that kind of a situation where whoever, let's say, busts down the front door...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's a mud puddle and all the mm-hmm. other stuff. Will you back off and try the back door? And just say, okay, the front, we're not going to worry about because that's the commercial end of things, and let's see if there's a body in there.
For us, it really depends on where the fire is. If we have a fire, for instance, in the back of the house, then we're normally going to try to get through the front door and save as much of that structure as we can by working our way back and keeping the fire from advancing into the unburned portion. Same for the back. If, you know, the front of the house is on fire, we're probably going to go around the back and make entry that way and try to cut the fire off and limit the amount of damage that's occurring inside of there. So those are the kind of tactics and things that you think about as you arrive on scene and you do your what we call a size up, where you're looking at the structure. And, yeah, you get that basic picture. Is it a single story? Is it a two-story residence? Is it a commercial building? But, yeah, once you get inside that door, there's a lot of surprises.
If there are wires down or wires hanging or whatever, and there's mm-hmm. a fire, will they tend to arc and add to it? Can you just kind of go through using your rubber-soled boots, of course, as we learned in the last segment?
Right.
And lop the lines or get them out of the way or just rip them down? I mean, can you...
Yeah, one of the first things we do is we assign a crew to what we call secure the utilities. So they will immediately go to the gas meter and the electrical panel and shut off the service disconnect for both so that anything inside is not energized and charged. But, you know, there have been instances where we're in a structure and firefighters are using their hooks and things to pull down ceiling and they've grabbed onto a wire and the power hasn't been de-energized because it's coming from another source we don't expect. And, yeah, you get a little bit of a jolt there and a little surprise in a hurry.
Yeah. And we find out how quick the reactions are,
too. That's right.
Yeah. Oh, just that kind of stuff has got to be interesting. Will your heat cameras and I guess that's what it is. Will they work in that kind
cameras.
Of a situation where you've got a lot of extra heat or you've got the
Yeah, absolutely. Lamps? They'll differentiate the heat and the amount of heat. So we could look at a structure through our thermal imaging cameras, look in and see that varying gradients of heat, essentially. So something that's cooler versus something right next to it that's much hotter is going to show in a different color for us. And our firefighters are trained, obviously, to detect that and see what's out there and how to deal with it.
It's 3:30.
Remember the music from your trip to Latin America? You are invited to listen to the newest member of our radio family, 1790 AM, a Spanish-language music station with sports from ESPN and news from CNN Español. If you own a business, invite Juan listeners into your business. For information, call 442-5744 or go to juan790.com. Juan 790, tocando lo que le gusta.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with a guy who calls himself the Fire Chief, Ken
still,
Woods.
Still do.
Yeah. So now you got everybody calling you Fire Chief now, huh?
I do. We're finally finished with consolidation as of January 1st, which was a three-year process, a lot of hurdles and roadblocks, but we've overcome them, and as of January 1st, all of our employees now are employees of Humboldt Bay Fire, and we've tied up all those loose ends, and we're a single organization, and really I think the benefit for the citizens is we're providing a service that's better than we ever have before, a higher level of service, and the employees have really responded to embracing a higher level of customer service as well, on all different levels. Whether not just on the emergency calls, but also non-emergencies as well, and that's been a real positive. And I think the citizens that we serve have benefited, and they see that. We hear about it a lot. People are appreciative of the kind of things we do, not just again putting out fires and going out of medical, but the extra things that our firefighters do on a daily basis.
Well, and grocery shop.
Yeah, grocery shopping.
That's right. Got to be tricky. I mean, that kind of thing. You kind of get, you know, You know, you see the guys running around.
Right.
Yeah. You know, but they're still working, and, you know, if an alarm happens, I bet you the shopping cart stays where it is. And all of a sudden, you see three kids running out the front door.
You do. Right. And, you know, we had a case right before Christmas where an engine company was shopping. And I talk about the customer service aspects and going beyond emergency calls. You know, an individual ahead of them in line had forgotten a credit card, the debit card. Didn't have it to make the purchase, and one of our firefighters paid the bill and wished them a Merry Christmas. And, you know, that's the type of customer service that I'm pretty proud of for our guys, helping out the community and not doing it because they have to or anything else. It's because they want to. And this was somebody that, you know, was very appreciative, but it's just what our guys do, and I'm pretty pleased with that.
Well, hopefully then that got passed on and passed on and passed on.
Yeah, and absolutely.
You hope it doesn't stop at one.
Right. You know, the individual came back to the stations after the fact a couple days later and brought cookies for the crew. So, you know, it did get passed on beyond that. But obviously that wasn't the intent of the crew to get cookies down the road.
However.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, it's real gratifying to see customer service in action every day. And not because they have to. It's because they want to. And they do it in a number of ways that I would never even imagine. And that's just one of them right there.
Free car washes. I've seen that.
Yeah, we will do that. Right.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, never leave it open.
No, I don't.
Always walk through that
there.
Door.
Yeah. Don't leave your windows open either, right?
Now that you are, the entity is secure, what does that speak to, or where does that leave you with some of the physicalness of the fire stations? You know, we've got the one at Myrtle Grove. It's too small. You've
right.
got the one that has the tarps
right.
by Eureka Mall.
Yeah.
It's like there are signs of antiquation
right.
that are all over, unless we're going to have the fire moped instead of the fire truck.
Right. We're not quite there yet.
No.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and there is still a reality check of dollars and cents.
It is.
The formalization or the finalization of the consolidation, does that now give you more flexibility to start looking at some of these things and going, okay, if the city's not going to do it, we're going to have to figure out how to do it. And if we have to sell this property or move here or do that, so be it. It's
yeah.
now time.
You know, as part of our joint powers agreement, the parent agencies, the city and the district, still own the actual facilities. However, because we are now one organization, you know, we're looking at operations much differently, and we are looking ahead to, you know, just because a location has been in a place for 50 years, is it really the best place? As we combine and went through that process, and now we have five stations instead of three, we are looking down the road, you know, maybe there's a better location for a station. Obviously, the money is still the challenge and the finite revenue that way, but really combining the resources now has given us the ability to be more proactive. We've done it with our apparatus fleet. We've eliminated a couple of our engines, saving money that way. But because we've combined, you know, it gives us the ability to streamline and use our resources in a much more beneficial way to the community.
When you look at the coverage area.
Yeah.
I guess it would mm-hmm. be the coverage area.
Right.
In trying to cite the ideal locations for the five stations.
Right.
Would you put a higher priority on where the calls are, or would you put a higher priority on equal distribution so the response time to any of them is at a lower level?
Right. And it's really a combination of both, but we will tend to see, you know, where the calls are. It doesn't do any good to put a station, for instance, out on Elk River Road, where it will cut down our response times to the southern end of our district, but there's, you know, potentially very few calls out there. So
to places you're not going.
Exactly. Yeah. It just doesn't do. You know, if there's going to be, there is the potential for future development cutting, for instance, and more structures out there and that type of thing. And we want to be looking towards where is a good location for a station if these things materialize. But right now, it's really affecting our call volume and our stations. Four of them are pretty darn good locations for the types of calls we have. The one at Myrtle and West has really overlapping between two of our other stations, and that would be the one that we would eventually look towards moving to a better location and providing that better coverage down the road.
Well, I would imagine that property is pretty desirable.
Yeah, I would hope so. If there's any developers that are interested right now, we'd be happy to unload it on them. But
yeah, let's just yeah. expand the cemetery, man.
Yeah, yeah. But our stations, you know, four of them were built in 1957, and in fact, one of them today, the one at Henderson and Ocean, is finally getting a new roof on it.
Oh,
as
really?
We speak.
Now, how'd you swing yeah. that deal, Kemosabe?
It got to the point with a combination of leaks and mold that it was going to be move the crew out of there, close the station, or just get the roof done. And we had to get the roof done.
So getting the roof done and then the drywall torn out?
Well, not so much drywall, but we had mold in. We had mold up in the attic more so from the roof.
Okay.
So that was cleaned, and the roof is asbestos, so we had to have a specialty contractor come in and remove that at a great expense. But the new roof is going on, I'm pleased to say.
Is it a long-lived one? Is it one of those metal roofs, or is it just
a... No, it's a...
Regular comp?
Yeah, it's a regular comp roof that's going to go on. But the old one, you know, we got It was the original route from 1957.
Too many unintended skylights, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. Right.
KINS, News and Information Times, 344. We'll be back with more from Ken Woods.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time is 3:47. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with Ken Woods. So, what are you looking at here the next little bit? The drug stuff doesn't seem to be slowing down.
No,
the medical aids don't seem to be slowing down.
Right.
Are you considering the thought of having like a knockdown or a quick response kind of unit and that wouldn't be running with water? It would be
We're
just getting the guys out there.
We're considering it right now. We're looking at potential options for what we want to do. You know, the majority of the calls are medical that we respond on, so we need to carry the medical gear. But when we do have a fire, we want to make sure that there is a minimum complement of equipment that firefighters have, air packs, some of our forcible entry tools, things like that, that they can get started if they were to get there first. So yeah, we're actually looking at some other types of vehicles right now.
So there is a pretty good range.
Well, yeah, there's
the
a lot
you
of,
have. I mean, it's like you can put the barbecue in there too.
Oh yeah, we can carry everything.
Let's roll
on there.
And we'll be back in a week,
right,
dear.
Right. There's a lot of options. The biggest thing for us is because we are isolated up here, and most of the other departments that we call on for help are, you know, they're extended time, so that we need to make sure we not have enough apparatus and personnel to try to deal with 99% of our calls ourselves for the most part. If we do take an engine out of service then and replace it with a smaller vehicle, we need to be very careful that we are not selling ourselves short when it comes to the fire side. There are not a lot of fire calls in proportion to the medicals, but when we have them, they're pretty big events.
Well, I was thinking with the smaller stations that you physically smaller stations that you're mm-hmm. referring to, you know, I bet you could get, well, like your command rigs,
right?
I bet you those fit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, okay, so the equivalent of that, and if you only have to run two to a medical instead of three,
right?
Okay, so maybe there's a little bit of flexibility if you redefine some of the stuff.
There is, and that's exactly what we're looking at in potentially redeploying resources. So, you know, our stations, four out of the five have a crew of three always on the engine. If we put a smaller vehicle, we'd put two people in that station and move the other one to another facility. And, you know, that redeployment, really, we have to look closely at the types of things you mentioned earlier. You know, the calls, the types of calls we have, and then the distance that we're traveling, those response times.
Yeah, like responding to a car crash.
Well, right.
Okay. You know, if there's a lot of people involved, obviously you need more bodies, but if it's just a regular kind of thing.
Yeah, it always helps to have the extra bodies. You know, on a standard medical call, three people is a nice luxury to have, particularly if someone's having a heart attack, you're doing CPR, you're trying the paramedics, trying to start, you know, an IV, all those types of things, get information from the bystanders. If it's a vehicle accident, you know, we want to make sure we have our extrication equipment that we can quickly begin to remove the patients and treat them that way. So there's a number of factors, and our biggest issue, again, is not having the resources around us to support us and provide the help if we really need it and call them in.
Stay tuned for Measure Q Squared.
Yes.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks.
Join us on Monday for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow morning.